My name is Jordan Lavelle. I'm from the John Molson School of Business. I teach food marketing over there. That's the other university down the block, the McGill competitor. But then again, I'm a McGill product, so it's difficult for me to say that. I have a dual task this morning. Lorette asked me, well, actually arm-twisted me. If anyone who knows Lorette knows what I'm talking about, but she didn't have to twist very hard. To, on the one hand, set the stage, so what are we doing here? And on the other hand, my second task is, and as I offered, is to try to frame our conversation this morning. After all the meetings I've attended through in this series of meetings, listening to very insightful presentation on genetics, the brain, economics, and so on, it's sometimes easy to forget there's a consumer in the middle of all of this. If you're awkward referring to this person as a consumer, as an individual, but I just thought I'd bring some of my stuff in to look at that, because that's what I do for a living, looking at consumer decision making. So I just thought I'd take a few minutes and use my moderator prerogative to throw a few more things at you. So first things first, the McGill World Platform for Health and Economic Convergence, that's a mouthful. What is that? It's all explained in your program. I'm just going to go very quickly. This was McGill's attempt at pulling all their resources together to address problems created by the misalignment between biology, the powers and limits of the human brain and body, with 21st century society. We've evolved, our brain, our body was probably prepared for a society, an environment that's not ours today. And so that confrontation, that misalignment, has created some unique challenges and problems, especially in the domain of chronic diseases. And that's what we're addressing here with the McGill World Platform. And that's we're doing that by gathering the best minds. So there's kudos to you. We're all here, the best minds in research, policy, agriculture, agribusiness, industry, and civic society. It started with the McGill Health Challenge think tanks. I've been involved with them since the beginning. And that's been really a strength, is that we've been able to pull everybody together. You often attend these conferences and, you know, you get people in policy, you get people in research, but the business side is not invited or refuses to attend. Luckily, we've been able to pull all sides here to enrich our conversation, and I'm very happy. And doing this with a silo-busting mentality, so the idea is convergence rather than divergence, collaboration, which of course implies dancing the pas de deux. You know, sometimes when you're coming from different disciplines, you use the same words to mean different things, or you use different words to mean the same thing. So we have to get over that hurdle before we can actually work together. And using what Lorette has developed with some of her colleagues, some of whom are in this room, I'm thinking of Antoine and others, the unique brain to society paradigm, which is really a nature plus nurture perspective. And just to explain that, it's really taking a whole of society perspective, understanding that the individual, the consumer, is functioning in a broader society as our businesses making decisions, government bodies making decisions. So looking at this whole of society perspective, focusing on creating health and well-being and sustainable prosperity, not just for the lucky few in developed countries, but for everybody around the world. It's become clear over the meetings that we've had, attended with, you know, amazing presentations we've had with Nobel laureates and others, that globalization is not going to work if it works for a handful of lucky citizens around the world, leaving behind others. And this is really, going forward, building on the most cutting-edge advances in brain sciences. And I'm happy we have Antoine here, who is officially co-chairing this session, so don't leave me hanging here if I forget anything. But also society sciences. Notice we're not calling them social sciences, but sciences that look at the workings of society at various levels. Also bringing in the best of what we're calling complex system and network mapping. Anybody who knows anything about the food industry or eating healthy knows that it's a very complex issue as soon as you try to fix something at one end, and sustainability is also similar to that. You try to fix something at one end, it goes out of whack at the other, so finding that balance is very difficult. And looking for science-society collaboration, so really bringing, you know, the the best minds and researchers out of their ivory tower and research lab in confronting them with real-life social problems to try to find solutions. So it's the Brain to Society Roadmap, which is, this is the third meeting in this series, is a three-year program that is designed to advance the pool of scientific, social, economic resources that we dedicate to tackling these problems. And since the first meeting, the first roadmap, a number of projects have been started, each with a number of initiatives on the ground. And I'm just going to list some of these projects. The environmental responsiveness endophenotype, environmental, nutritional, and motivational balance. Good morning, Kripa. Balance project, which is really looking at the interaction of genes and environment. How do our genes or genetic makeup predispose us to overeat in this case? Another project has been the Healthy Nights and Days project, looking at the role of sleep in obesity prevention. Another project has been the Multi-Actor Health Ecosystem Design Project, looking at rethinking health management system. Anybody who's from Quebec knows that there's a massive effort to be undertaken there in redesigning, looking at how we manage our health system, and not just in Quebec. The Global Health Diplomacy Project is looking at international diplomacy, governance, and global health issues. The Knowledge Networks and Markets Project is really looking at creating knowledge and financial markets solutions to find solutions for health problems and health challenges. And the Agriculture for Food and Fuel Project is looking at environmental and health impacts of agriculture for sustainability. What we're here this morning is to, it fits into another project we're starting, which is the Transformative Innovation for Healthy Living project, and that's looking at the role of industry-led innovations in promoting healthy eating. And as part of this project, we already have initiatives on the ground. We're going to hear about some of them. They're described in your program. You'll see right away this was written by Lorette, and anyone who knows Lorette's writing style knows that sometimes it's a little bit, you've got to come at it a few times to get the gist. So I just thought I'd summarize some of that for you this morning to situate you. The Active Insight Project, we're going to hear from Johanna. Hopefully she's landing right now and will be joining us around 10. She's looking at mapping consumption behaviors, beliefs, semiotics, emotions, values, consumer self-concepts, state of mind, relationships, and lifestyle that drives eating decision. That's a lot. It's usually often referred to as the soft side of marketing, but she's looking at that in a project, and that's what she does with her company, so she'll come in and tell us about that. We have the Healthy Eating Experience Project that's led by Bernschmidt out of Colombia, looking at understanding healthy eating behaviors, perceptions, and the actual experience of eating healthy, this around the world in 18 different markets, and pulling all of this data together. And we have Hank Cardello in the U.S. leading a project looking at gathering evidence and developing metrics to convince and to make a business case to food companies as to why they should take healthy eating seriously. I mean, we can throw soft arguments at them, but nothing speaks like hard numbers, and that's what he's trying to do, is building the case for that. Anybody who knows anything about the food industry, we often refer to the food industry as a big, giant entity. It's actually a collection of different players with different agendas, with different economic and operating realities and models. So he's looking at that and interested in taking that to Canada as well. Now, our goal this morning, let me just backtrack to that, is to come up with other projects, right? And that's why we've tried to gather people who can come in from different angles who might be interested in starting projects of their own, seeking collaboration and inspiration from others around the table. So I think by the end of the session this morning and certainly throughout the rest of the day, we'll be inspired and can come up with other projects. So hopefully in a year from now, we can report back on yet more projects under this healthy living and industry-led innovation. Now I'm going to use, I was told to keep my remarks to 10 minutes, so I'm really going to try to do that. Just to situate things, because as I said, having attended these meetings for the last 7 years, sometimes I feel that not everybody situates the food industry. And because I've been teaching food marketing, even when I started developing my material, I was flabbergasted by the sheer size and what's going on in that industry. It's big business. That's no secret. In the U.S., the food plus food service sectors are valued at $1.2 trillion. In Canada, it's $150 billion. And a couple of things that you may not know, it is actually in both countries and in many other countries as well, and I apologize for our colleagues from the UK and other countries that I haven't pulled the data from those countries, but it's actually the largest private sector employer. The food and food service sector employs the most number of employees and people, so it's a huge motor of the GDP and the economy. And for every dollar consumers spend on food, there's just about $2 triggered in supplier industries. In the U.S., it's actually estimated at $2.32. I don't know how they come up with the 32 cents. And in Canada, it's $1.99. So just about $2 in ancillary revenues is generated from the food industry. And right now, there's a huge tug of war going on for the consumer's food dollar. On the one hand, you have the people who are selling you what we call food at home, which is food that you prepare at home. And then on the other hand is what we call food away from home. We're not very creative, I guess, in coming up with these labels. So there's food at home and food away from home. Let me just give you a bit of a sense of that. In the U.S., right now, 51% of the consumer's food budget is actually spent on food away from home. And that is usually restaurants. And you can imagine that is usually food that is heavily laden with fat and sugar and all these kinds of things, which has, you know, led to the restaurants and the restaurant industry being finger pointed for its role in the obesity industry. In Canada, of course, we have a different dollar, so I had to change my slide recently. It's 41% that of the food budget of the consumer's food dollar that is allocated to food away from home. So there's still that tug of war, although a smaller portion is going to food away from home. And that's the kind of environment that our consumer is facing. Now, you may think here that you're... Please, come on in here again. You may think this is a grocery store. Actually, it's not. It's a pharmacy. It's a drugstore, which speaks to the changing landscape of the food industry. Hybrid drugstores are drugstores where 50% of the selling floor is dedicated to food. So that's the environment in which our consumer is making food choices. Now, the food dollar, if you look at the dollars spent on food, I'm just going to move this perhaps. Actually, it's been estimated by the USDA, and these are 2006 numbers, so it might have changed since then, but the latest numbers is that 19 cents out of that dollar spent on food actually goes to farm value, to the actual farming of the product you're getting. 81% is what we are calling the marketing bill or the marketing dollar, mostly dedicated to labor, packaging, transportation, energy, and other things. As my colleague Thibault Joubert, who's really an expert on sustainability, pointed out in a separate conference we had last week at Concordia, we often think that the bulk of the carbon footprint of the food industry is actually at this end, the packaging end, but it's really here. So there's really an interesting dynamic going on here. And, of course, food marketers, what we're trying to do is to target and influence the consumer's choice. And that's my very, very lame attempt at drawing a consumer. You'll understand I'm no artist and no Picasso. And for the longest time, the food industry used to think along the following lines. Secret or success, the secret to success laid in creating products or food concepts that align in some measure the following dimensions: pleasure, health, and convenience. Mostly pleasure and convenience, and then health got on the radar screen, I would say, maybe 10 years ago or something like that, roughly speaking. And, of course, it's become more and more present in the minds of the corporate food industry. And so that's kind of tricky. If you think that's easy, finding the right balance in your R&D and your communication and all that, pretty tricky. But you know what? The food landscape that the consumer is exposed to has created yet new dynamics, new factors. These are just some of the popular books that have come out and that are educating consumers or shaping consumers' choices when it comes to food, along with things like the Food Network, the popularity of shows and chefs, even food safety scares that are really putting food at the forefront of consumers' minds and changing that dynamic between pleasure, health, and convenience. And recently this was put forth in a book that my colleague, in an article that my colleague Brian Wansink at Cornell wrote on the 200-plus decisions we make about food every day. We may not realize it, but we make over 200 decisions that are food-related every day. And those decisions are not, I mean, the burger versus the salad is just the tip of the iceberg. There's a whole lot more. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Below that is a whole lot more dynamics. So hitting the mark and reaching the consumer is like reaching a moving target. And so our consumer here... I had to change my slide after attending some of Lorette's presentation. You know, we really have to consider the heart, really the emotional side of decision making is what I meant here. And of course, all the biological, visceral impact on decision making. And as if, you know, aligning pleasure, health, and convenience wasn't difficult enough, now what the industry is looking at is other dynamics that are equally important, such as food safety, sustainability, but more and more the consumer very much aware that when he or she is spending a food dollar is also expressing part of his identity. You know, I've done focus group for companies and in with my classes where consumers will say, well, I don't buy from this company because I read somewhere that they mistreated their employees, or in their latest union negotiation, they locked out their employees, and I disagree with management, so I'm not buying from this company anymore, right? So there's really almost a conscious decision that when you're spending your food dollar, you are also expressing your identity as a consumer. And that's really the reality that consumers face. Today's supermarket has about 100,000 different SKUs or different products, which is five times more than it had in 1950. So that's the reality. That's where the choices are really being made. In fact, 65 to 75%, depending on the estimates that you want to believe, of consumers' decisions are made at that moment on the floor, which is why I titled my presentation POS, Consumer Decision Making. And in marketing, POS is often used to refer to point of sale, the point of purchase, the point at which you make that transaction. But in the food world, the transaction is really at the checkout counter. But we can also think of POS at that point of selection, that moment where you're going to choose product A versus product B. It may be on the floor here, but it may be, you know, as you're leaving the office thinking about what you're going to have for dinner, for example. So we really have to understand that decision making from a larger point of view and contextualize that in the minds of the consumer. How is the consumer approaching that decision making? Whether it's at the grocery store, whether it's making a choice once the food is in the house, or whether it's in the restaurant looking at all sorts of available choices, or whether it's, as you're sitting down, the choice to eat another bite, right? So I just wanted to contextualize that. And recently, it's been made very clear to me, I just completed a grant, a look at the health check program. And, you know, as much as we try to get to consumers eating healthy, now we've got food product companies, especially the Pepsi products of Gatorade and, Tropicana, offering consumers Aeroplan for all their purchases. So now, you know, we're contending with another factor in the decision-making process. So I just wanted to bring that to the floor as I pass it on to whoever else is supposed to talk after me, to sort of remind us that there is a consumer in the middle of all of that, trying to make decisions, trying to do the best that he or she can, but really facing a very complex environment. For those of you who wonder what that is, this was brought to the floor a few years ago by the Foresight Institute in the UK. This is sort of trying to map all of the actors that are directly or remotely involved in getting people to eat healthy. And this has been referred to in the sort of in a friendly way as the spaghetti map. And when I show it to students, even without calling it the spaghetti map, some of them will start referring it as a spaghetti plate, and they'll talk about the meatballs, you know, of the in this picture. So it just serves to remind us of what a complex system looks like. So having said that, and hopefully contextualize a little bit some of our discussion this morning, I'll pass it on. Let me see who's.